these are carbon atoms. It's a ring cyclic molecule. So what we actually do first, so I didn't want to put too much in the slide before this, but tetramethylpyrazine and this molecule gets boron with pentathenylfluorine groups. Those two molecules, if you mix them together, just sit in solution and weakly interact with each other. And if we add hydrogen to that solution, the first thing that happens is it actually spontaneously reacts with hydrogen at room temperature and at atmospheric pressure to make this molecule. So this is kind of another step before this. So that's the secret of our invention, in a sense. We discovered that this thing reacts with carbon dioxide. That was known by researchers in Canada and Toronto. So that first part is that, first of all, activates the hydrogen. And they're very active. Physically, it makes hydrogen more reactive, which sets it up to react with the CO2. Because hydrogen and CO2 won't react at room temperature. And so what happens is, this is actually the carbon dioxide here. These are oxygens. And so, and this is the boron, there's an atom here, and these are the benzene rings of fluorine groups. So that's a kind of like an umbrella molecule. And then this is a salt. So this is a cation with carbon dioxide. And then more hydrogen comes in here and does further reactions. We can study all that steps, three or four additional steps, one by one. And one of the beauties of our work is we actually can learn what's going on by studying each step. So our job, of course, now is to optimize this, scale it, and so on. And I think one of the gentlemen in the audience came up at the break and said, well, is it toxic? Well, of course, it's toxic. I wouldn't be eating it if I had the chance. Is it reactive and sensitive to oxygen? Yes, of course, because to be so reactive to carbon dioxide, it has to be incredibly reactive to everything else, right? And so we would have to do this chemistry in an oxygen-free carbon dioxide. But all technologies have these limitations, right? But one of the really good things about this molecule is it doesn't react with CO, and that's remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. CO is much more chemically reactive. As you know, it's a poison, right, to us. It binds to our hemoglobin. So this system is so beautiful that it reacts with CO2 selectively versus CO. Because most carbon dioxide sources you will find globally will always have CO in them. It's the partial combustion, like your exhaust pipe. There's a lot of CO2 comes out your exhaust emissions in your car, but there's always CO, right? Because that's partial combustion. So a lot of really nice things have had to come together to get this to work.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right, anybody got a common question? Maybe? Will, at the back?
Hi, you mentioned you've got work to do on getting it to work at scale.
Yeah.
Optimizing it.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
A bit louder. They're struggling here.
You said you've got work to do in scaling this up. I was just wondering what kind of scales you had been doing this reaction at, and what kind of progress have you made in that scaling up?
Good question. So we've been doing it on kind of glassware about that size. milligrams of material, a very precise control and so on. So when I pitched this like Dragon's Den type thing to entrepreneurs and literally, you know, in Dragons and up in summertime and so on, you get quite a battery. So I don't promise I can do this to a big scale. I said I need £1 million in 5 years and we'll give it a go. Which is not an awful lot of money in the scientific world, really, for us. The business school have done a modelling, some business final year MBA students have looked at this, and this is obviously one of these ones where investors would change the world
might lose the lot. Yeah. And nobody at the minute is willing to take the risk, and I'm not willing to say things I don't want to say. I could, you know, be a little bit, you know, less truthful perhaps, and get, but I don't want to be. That's not, it's highly risky, but has the potential of changing the world. It has to scale, and that's a massive problem. And would need engineering solutions, and it needs carbon dioxide pure, and it would need hydrogen there. So I would need CO2 and hydrogen brought together, but there really is almost nowhere that has CO2 and hydrogen next to each other. Otherwise, one has to be shipped to the other. So there's all kinds of logistical problems about that. Long way.
What sort of energy do you require to put in to generate the hydrogen, compared to the energy you're likely to get out when you finally use the methanol?
Yeah. So the energy, as I said, to turn it all around is the hydrogen. Probably the best way right now is to electrolyze water, though you could do photo splitting of water, but that's not really proven technology yet. But what you would use is electricity generated from renewables. So electrolysis of water is not, what's it like, 30% efficient or something like that, because of resistive losses and all kinds of things. But the energy is coming from renewable to make it credible. I can't be burning fossil fuel to make electricity, to make hydrogen, to make carbon. Yeah, that's nonsense, right?
Yeah.
So that's what everybody has to do.
So ultimately, this is a sort of a chemical storage.
Yes. It's a way of converting electricity into chemical energy, which is a store. Because a barrel of methanol will sit there, and whenever you wanted to, you can turn methanol into just fuel, or you actually can turn methanol back into electricity as a fuel cell. Yeah.
Let's go here and then
there. One thing that you said early on, you talked about you didn't want to create methane, but methane's natural gas. It's something you do want to create, isn't it?
It's very inefficient because you'd have to compress it, liquefy it. I would be producing gaseous methane, which is actually a very low, it's also a terrible greenhouse gas. So for various reasons, methane is not a good way to go. It's not what you'd want.
On a high technical sense, which end of that carbon dioxide becomes the CH3 and which end becomes the OH?
So that... So this becomes, that stays to the very end, this breaks away, and that becomes a CH3. And you make a methoxide, you make OMeOH3, you make BOCH3, and then the very last bit, you cleave this off here, and you make methanol.
Right, thank you.
And we can see that, those steps in the process.
What sort of efficiency does this have? Is it storage?
So I said it's 100% selective, but it's only 20% yield. It's only 20% yield, but the other bit doesn't react. It's not as if it's not, it's going off somewhere else. You can't have 100% selectivity enough. So that what happens is that the rest of it just doesn't react. So it's actually an equilibrium, that's the problem.
Yeah.
This can go backwards.
What I was wanting to compare it with is sort of if you took sunlight and a solar panel and stored it in the battery to get energy, or to presumably sunlight in your case, split up water.
Split up water, yeah.
Took your carbon dioxide, which is a useful thing to
get
up the carbon dioxide.
What
sort of efficiency do you
Well, think? Of course, the problem of doing economics today is there is no benefit at the minute for capturing carbon dioxide. So all these numbers completely change if the government or whatever said, if you absorb carbon dioxide from the environment, we would pay you. So I get no credit for taking the CO out. And so whenever you crunch numbers here, it just economically doesn't work yet. But as soon as you have a serious emissions tax, even I think I was saying earlier, the crazy thing right now is when people do due diligence on this, hydrogen today is more expensive than methanol. How crazy is that? Right? Because there is undersupply of hydrogen in the market. It's used for lots of things. There's oversupply of methanol right now today. So when you are a businessman doing number crunching, there's no credit for taking the CO. It's just good citizenship, right? And you have to buy hydrogen in the market, and you end up making methanol, which is less valuable, right? So they say, oh, we're not investing in that, because we can't make any money. But if you were to put a premium on your CO2, and then you happen to be, you happen to be like Trolis's company making chlorine, byproduct of making chlorine is hydrogen. So if you happen to be in a business where you also if you run a petrochemicals plant and you make hydrocarbon from cracking crude oil, they flare hydrogen off, or they have you. So people sometimes, where it is, it's all about where all these things are.
Comes to the front. The back first, then the front, and then the far side, yeah.
I heard you mention spectroscopy. I heard you mention spectroscopy.
Yes. NMR, spectroscopy and magnetic resonance.
Is that what you use to follow the...
Yeah. With labels, C13 labels, carbon dioxide to spin a half nucleus, and then deuterium and hydrogen. So we've followed it all in all different aspects. So that's why if we feed this with 100% isotopically labeled carbon dioxide, we get 100% isotopically labeled methanol. Or if we feed this with deuterium instead of hydrogen D2, we get 100% CD3OD.
So, feedstock and the substrate.
Yeah, we've double checked it.
Thanks.
Hi. Have you thought of crowdfunding? Is there a problem with getting the funding? It would seem to be like the perfect thing for crowdfunding. Millions of people paid a couple of quid.
Yeah.
It wouldn't really make much of a difference
to
them if they lose it or gain it.
Does it work?
Well, I'm looking into doing sort of kickstarting crowdfunding. They do work, yeah, maybe you have to sort of frame it, but I'm sure it seems to me like...
Well, I was very close to a spin-out company. The university took us quite far down where we would actually form a company called Convoco, C-O backwards, Convoco.
Yeah.
And it was a bit like dominoes, really. We had Exxon, possibly... We put invest, and we had a VC in London, and then another company. But they all were kind of slightly touchy about it. And then one fell, and the dominoes all fell over. So I'd only pay money if you put in money, and they all were kind of share the risk. And it was too unstable; that it just collapsed. But that's the problem whenever one company won't. It's very hard to get funding from my side from a company on a 5-year program. Mm. It's too far away. That's
the thing. If you made interesting videos and showed progression, perhaps crowdfunding is a way to go.
Or you just want a very wealthy individual who just feels he wants when you have this. It's like a Bill Gates situation. Bill Gates is obviously targeting health.
You don't want much, do
you? You said that Susan was a potential battery and that we're getting fuel.
Yeah.
Can you see down the road with a lot more work anything that would then work also as a way of carbon capture? I mean, they're talking about crazy things like storing carbon dioxide underground in rocks.
You notice I didn't talk about carbon capture.
No, I know you didn't.
I know.
Do you mind?
I'd love to, yes.
If you could scale this up absolutely enormously,
yeah.
Could you store underground huge vats of sea? Of methyl argon, would it take up more space that way than this carbon dioxide?
No, well, we would use it. We would live on it, in a sense. So
So carbon. Yeah, could you get the 400 parts per million plus that we've got out there in the atmosphere?
That's
280 parts per million. I mean, you need a pretty large amount.
Yeah, so I don't think my technology will work on atmospheric carbon dioxide. It would be a unit you'd plug into a petrochemicals plant or a cement plant or a power station. You'd have a module on the stack, right? And in that module there'd be some sort of filtering technology, maybe some purification technology. And so what you would then have coming off that stack, rather than a big plume of carbon dioxide coming off, you'd be basically bottling methanol.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Which is cool.
Yeah.
It is, it's very cool.
Yeah.
But we still have the other big problem.
We have.
That's on your field. Do you aware of what's going on?
Well,
do you think
I think
there's any chance at all we will bring down the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, or is it just going relentlessly up?
Yeah, it's whenever it's economic to do, whenever they're forced to do it. I mean, shoving it down the ground, of course, I think is rather boring. But I'm a chemist, right? That's an engineering solution, and they are injecting carbon dioxide. That happens at the minute, and that's been done on a pretty big scale. It's also used for enhanced oil recovery, so they're actually pressurizing the well now with CO2 to get the last bit of the oil out, that's enhanced, and then shoving the oil into the ocean, the CO2 in the ocean, or down, or putting it into the rock. But
it's still small, and the ocean's bad use because the ocean is acidifying, and the coral is.
So I would like a chemical solution.
Yeah, just a sec. I was just going to say that we've had speakers talking about other issues to do with energy before. We pointed out one of our biggest problems is we're utterly reliant on the convenience of liquid fuel.
Yes.
So your comment that you could just transfer, I mean, current cars can burn methanol.
Oh, sure, yeah.
They don't need any major.
I think there's a couple of experts here anyway. It's not a very good fuel, but it's low density.
It's a liquid need directly replace our current.
You just need slightly bigger tank for the same range, and you need bigger injectors and a bit more plumbing. But there are cars driving around now which are tri-fuel cars, and the sensors in the fuel tank that will detect it. It's gasoline, ethanol, or methanol, and it just changes the mapping. And that's there are cars right now in the UK. Doing that.
So you said it's in equilibrium.
Yes.
So if you ship off the methanol, do you get more?
What we'd actually quite like to try and do is here's your truck, get a bit technical. He's one of my students. So that might be a very clever way. I do it in a liquid, it's a very high boiling liquid, and so the methanol would just come out and then push it through. We just need to try that, and that might actually work. I'll put in a support. Yeah, good question.
Let me come sneaking out.
Two points. Just methanol and water, they don't back react with the
Shot these people. So one of the reasons why it's not completely selective is, of course, that boron quite likes oxygen and it quite likes the water, and it runs out of steam eventually. So we've actually just made a boron another one of these actually, but with chlorine here, which is tolerant to water. So we've made it a bit bulkier, and that was actually one of our big things recently. We've actually made a system that actually survives the water, because the water is a problem. We tried to suck the water away as it's made. We put molecular sieves in the system to suck up the water as it's produced.
One other point is that you're making methanol, which is cheaply produced in Brazil and South Africa and various other places by fermentation of biomass.
Yeah.
So you're going to be competing with that.
Yeah.
And that's cheap because the CO2 is fixed by sunlight and so on.
So that's plants making biomass, right? Which is another technology. I don't actually think we can change the world with most people. That will be a solution. It's a good solution for some parts of the world. What are we going to eat?
if we convert the planet to biomass production. It's kind of a scary, and of course we can't grow enough. So we basically, I don't think people think biomass solves our fuel problem sustainably. But in certain parts of the world, it'll be a big contributor to their net fuel balance.
I think as a result of the Americans using grain-generated alcohol,
yeah.
As a result of the Americans drinking grain-generated alcohol, they've shifted the food prices. So
yes.
What you're saying is already happening.
Yeah. So that's why I said at the beginning, one technology will not win, it will be about it. Solar will be, solar panels become more efficient, that will be a very important technology, they're making great progress on that. You've got to watch about how expensive it is to make silicon. The payback time, people sort of sometimes overplay that. But there'll be biomass, there'll be algae, huge investments in algae, because algae can be put in tanks, there's need to use the soil. But again, there's tremendous issues of getting the light docked into an algae farm and all that. So there'll have to be a portfolio balance of all these bits and bobs.
I wanted to ask you really about because on here the UK patent.
Yes.
And could you explain to me what it means as far as say the Chinese or the Americans are concerned?
Okay, that's good. Right, so as I've gone on, I've become more interested actually in intellectual property. And quite a lot of my students are now going into this part of commerce, patenting, patent examiners, the legal world in terms of intellectual property. So what inventions that are created in the United Kingdom, especially here, for example, you would file the disclosure, it's called, where you write up your results, you write up what's cool about it, and you file in London at the UK Patent Office, and you get what's called a priority date, and that is the day you file a patent, and that's when the clock starts on your progress. So then, after about 6 months, a UK examiner would read a patent, examiner reads that patent and says, that's a pile of rubbish, it's all known. Or it's pretty good, and that's called an examination, and on it goes. So, and after about a year, you can then go to the international phase, it's called. I'm kind of shortcutting a few steps. And that's when it gets published to the world, and then it gets a more rigorous examination. That's when I can find patents. That's when it first comes on the radar for everybody else. And then, China signed up to the International Patent Treaty, IPO, and patents that are, and then you can elect to file in each individual. So if your patent is a valid patent, once it's been screened internationally, you then have to elect to protect in each country in the world. So this money just goes up and up and up. It's about $2,500 to file a UK patent. Dead cheap, but the money just runs away with you after a while. So then there's the European Patent Office, there's fees, and then you go into the international phase, and then you have to file. Then if you want a granted patent, so, and this is what ultimately is the only thing that counts in the end of the day, if it's granted in the countries that you want to protect. And each country, you have to file separately in their jurisdiction. And you have to pay fees to every single country in the world. And if it's not an English-speaking country, you have to get certified translations of the patent and file. So for Japan, China, Saudi Arabia, every country in the world. So patenting is enormously expensive. And that's why you've got to get partners on board pretty quickly. Otherwise, the university just ditches it. If they don't get... This patent will probably get lapsed quite soon if we don't find a... Because this is granted in the UK. It's gone to the European Patent Office, granted in Europe. Very, very straightforward because it's a new thing, right? It's absolutely obvious it would be straightforward. But now we're at the point where ICES are no longer willing to keep paying.
and they then pull the plug. So it's actually something, how I can do more of this. Finally, is the easy bit. It's the prosecution of it, which is actually really expensive. And then, and every year, just to finish, every year you have to maintain the patent. It's a bit of a racket,
actually. Yeah. Being a patent lawyer.
Yeah. So it's got to be very valuable, right?
You said in the beginning that the world's energy consumption was 10 to 14 watts.
Yes.
Well, speak as a mere physicist.
Yeah,
you've got to
pull me up. I've already been pulled up on
that.
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So what is the correct number?
I think the number is, that's actually straight out of review, so that's not a defence, I realise, but the number is right. I think it's terawatts is what they use.
Yes, but
so it's but not an energy unit,
that's
it's
power.
So it's power consumption.
Yeah.
Apologize.
So it's meaningless, you know, how many hours they
can I ask, you brought up there that this is the homogeneous version.
Yes.
We were talking earlier about heterogeneous chances.
Yes,
any way to turn it heterogeneous?
Yes, that would be, the only way would actually be scalable.
Yeah.
And we have a scheme to do that. We put it on a polymer support using graphene technology. So ultimately this went to a huge scale, went to say we never did cup is running, something like a did cup size power station. We'd have to run it where the gas flowed over a bed of it. It would be a solid gas running. But the beauty by doing the solution first is you learn all about it. And then the last step, you would maybe stick it on something, have the molecules flowing over the top of it.
The interesting thing about what you were saying about carbon capture, CO2 capture, is of course at the moment there isn't any obvious green outlet for CO2. As you say, it's used for particular uses in industry, but they're not green uses. It's not a way of permanently extracting it from the atmosphere. So it's kind of, if you build it, they'll come. You know, if you can show that there's a way there to turn it into something useful, maybe, you know, the engineers onto how to extract it from the atmosphere.
Methanol is only one, as I said, there's some work going on, not in Oxford, in the US particularly, where you turn it into polymers, polycarbonate, you know, which is a perspex type material you can make from carbon dioxide, in principle from epoxides. So which are much more reactive than molecules. Where those come from, of course, you'd have to find renewable solutions. But yeah, turning it into something useful would be then, would turn it from a problem to a value stream. You've got to add value to it.
I just want to ask about the catalyst. Do they, they're recyclable, but in practice they'll presumably get lost, and therefore there's some cost to replacing that. And is it expensive to replace?
Yes, at the minute it is, yes, of course, because they are made in our lab using very precise conditions and so on. Ultimately, we would have to work on the lifetime of that. And then we would have to then scale it. But that would be something, there are some processes run today using precious, these are not precious metals. It's not like platinum or rhodium or, so in terms of in the chemical world, this is cheap. Like there's platinum and rhodium in your catalytic converter, right? This is not anywhere remotely as expensive. These are cheap things. Boron's cheap, very abundant. Nitrogen compounds are very cheap and abundant. So that's actually a huge angle for us.
You mentioned that you might put this on some sort of polymer substrate.
Yes.
Is it possible that you could use a graphene sheet? Got the rings.
How many buzzwords do you want?
Many buzzwords, yeah. That is expensive. Graphene is incredibly expensive, of course. No, the cheapest thing you think of is polystyrene, actually. Just put it on a polystyrene bead. That's known. That's solid phase chemistry, organic chemistry, and other by.
Any other comments or contributions?
Yes.
Any questions? Well, what usually happens is people like to bag the speaker while they're clearing up. So I may let you do that, and obviously if you want to go back in the time, you've done the previous slides as well. Just to advertise, we have a slightly weird cafe next month. We always meet on the second Tuesday of every month, exceptionally in August, so everyone can have a break. So the second Tuesday of April, it's the dates on the poster next door, on the tea and coffee table. It's an unusual one. This is about Rorschach audio, say it carefully. In other words, unusual acoustic phenomena. There is a whole field of theories about things that have been heard on tapes that perhaps weren't created by people making the noise. And the chap who's going to come to speak about it is a debunker of the first order. So that will be a slightly more off-the-wall one, I think. I'm going to post a link to some of his previous work and interviews so that people can see what it's all about when they come. It should be interesting. He promises sound samples as well. And I don't know whether he's going to do the, play LPs in reverse. He hasn't asked me about that kind of technology. Those of you who are a bit older than the teenagers will remember that was a very big thing about 20 years ago. If you want to sign up to the mailing list, if you're not on it, please look at the website. The address is on the posters and flyers next door. I need to do a few more of those anyway. Or give me your email address on the suggestion slip if you have an idea for your speakers. I don't always pick them up. It depends entirely on whether we think it's going to work, whether it's something we've had before, whether they're even available, because quite often they are. You are very welcome to join the mailing list, and it's kind of an automated mailing list so that you, if you, your address changes, it can just bounce and then the system removes you from the list, which is quite helpful. Please do feel free to come again, and obviously big thanks to the museum for hosting us and giving us all their equipment, and to our helpers, who are all either mine or Dermot's or both chemistry students previously, now mostly doing graduate work. Thank you very much, and of course the biggest thank you all to Dermot for tonight.